Hi, this is Exposé with your host, Mike Russo, discussing issues of national importance for the next half hour. I have both an email address and a post office box for you to send any comments to. My email is MikeRussoExpose@yahoo.com. Russo is spelled R-U-S-S-O. And my post office box number is 13140, Denver, Colorado, 80201. And I'll give those addresses again at the end of the program. This morning, I decided to do something a little different than usual. Today, I thought we would have an on-air conference call with the three of us who have an interest in the welfare of the feral, stray, homeless cat population in Denver. Specifically, I'd like to focus on the nationwide program that has been very successful in controlling cat populations since its inception around 1990. Any cat people out there know that, of course, I'm referring to the Trap, Neuter, Return program. But is it feasible for Denver? Can we get political support to get it through city council and approved by the mayor? We have a lot to discuss, so let's get started with my guests introducing themselves to the radio audience. So Mark Warren and Alex Main, tell us who you are, what you do, and your involvement with cats. So Mark, why don't you begin?
Okay. My name is Mark Reinhardt, and I've been involved with a group called Divine Feline. And Divine Feline is an organization, it's a private charity, and we have a mobile surgical van, and we take that van into the field and neuter colonies of feral cats. We also do some tame cats as well. We have clinics that we operate during a month. And I serve on the board of that organization, and I'm very supportive of the cause.
I see. You did mention that you're an attorney, too, I believe, didn't you?
I am an attorney as well. I don't really practice specifically in this area other than my involvement with Divine Feline.
I see. Okay. And Alex, tell us about yourself.
Sure. I'm Alex Main. I work with an organization called Rocky Mountain Alley Cat Alliance. I'm the Trap, Neuter, Return coordinator there, and I'm working to try to create a public awareness campaign or a grassroots trap, neuter, return, much like Divine Feline is doing. And I've been working for this organization for over a year now and with cats for many, many years.
Okay. Well, let's begin by telling our radio audience what TNR is, Trap, Neuter, Return, exactly what it involves. So, Alex, you work for the Feline Fix, a very, very low-cost neutering clinic, especially, I think, this month of October, $10 to neuter a cat. So tell us about TNR.
Sure. Well, the name says a lot, Trap, Neuter, Return. It's all about going to a neighborhood or an area in which there is a large congregation of cats in a colony and trapping all of them, getting them fixed at a rate that both the public and the caretaker can afford, and then returning them to their territory.
I see. Okay. I think the next question should be directed to Mark, and that is, what do we need to consider in attempting to get legislation, TNR legislation, passed by Denver to help the feral, stray, and homeless cat populations? What are some of the things we need to consider legally? I mean, I would assume like we need to probably work with a council person, which I understand the council person of District 9 is interested in cat issues. We need to help us shepherd it through, but there's probably some drafting handbook on how to draft statutes for the city of Denver. There's probably a number of legal things we need to, I mean, is it, well, and I guess even the basic question is, your opinion, do we even really need TNR in Denver, or are we okay just the way we are?
Well, you know, I guess we need to start with, clearing up a potential misconception. And TNR is going on in Denver, and it's going on all the time. And
right.
Rocky Mountain Alley Cat Alliance and Divine Feline are the two principal players in that effort. So there's nothing illegal about TNR. And it's kind of interesting because the feral cat situation, it has sort of fallen by the cracks from a legal standpoint. I mean, feral cats aren't really considered wildlife by the State Department of Wildlife. They're not really considered pets. They're somewhere in between in a Netherland that, and I think they exist in that Netherland because people don't want to face up to the situation that they're out there and that they need to be dealt with. So TNR is going on. I think there are some things that we could do legislatively to help our efforts, and that's probably what you're talking about with your question. Certainly the city council in Denver could get involved, and I think probably the most effective thing that they could do would be to officially recognize TNR and officially recognize people that are taking care of colonies, because people that are taking care of colonies do have a certain legal risk that's involved in what they're doing. And we could, by city ordinance, make that much easier for those people in Denver and certainly in other communities around the area as well.
Well, that's the part of TNR, actually, that I was trying to focus on, because as a matter of fact, I've been doing TNR now for 15 years. But I have right in front of me here an article which kind of sums it up. It's from the Beverly Hills Courier with the heading, 65-year-old woman faces jail time for feeding cats. And the article goes on to say that this woman practiced TNR and even got homes for strays and kittens, but that feeding ferals and strays was prohibited because it attracts coyotes and other predatory animals. So it seems to me that cat people helping cats could use a little more protection, especially in the R part and the maintenance of a colony part. That's kind of what I'm getting at. And it seems like there's just solutions, though, other than jailing somebody and fining somebody. For example, I remember when I was having concerns because I was attracting some other wildlife, genuine wildlife, and I called her. There's an organization, animal organization here in Denver, I'm sure you heard of, called Urban Wildlife. I believe his name is Frank Kelly. But Amy Angelilli from Rocky Mountain Alley Cat Alliance, she told me to talk to him, and I did. And he said, it's pretty easy. As a matter of fact, you just need to know a little bit about the animals you're dealing with. So, for example, most of those animals, they come out only at night. So all you got to do is, as it starts to get dark outside, take away all the cat food that you have out, bring it inside. And I started doing that, and that pretty much solved the problem. But he even told me more. He says, well, skunks, for example, they can't climb. And so just put the food up a little high, and then only the cats can get it if you want to avoid the skunk thing. I never even had to go that way, though. Just taking in the food as it got dark, that took care of the real wildlife problem. So I don't know. You can see why people have a problem.
You make interesting points, Mike, and you don't have to go to Beverly Hills to see the problem. Yeah. Last spring, I was at a trial in Sterling, Colorado, where a couple had been feeding a feral colony on their property, and one of the neighbors complained because he didn't like the cats around. And they were on trial in the city of Sterling for having too many cats. And even though these cats were wild and could not possibly be made pets because they were feeding them, they were being considered to be the owners of these cats. And even though the city's own animal control agency thought that this was a terrific idea that they were feeding these cats and that they had paid out of their own pockets to have them neutered, the judge didn't see it that way. And that's a real problem for people. And Alex, I'm sure you have a lot of experience in this area.
Definitely, yeah. The big problem is that there just isn't an exception right now for cats. And as far as the return part, like Mike was saying, that is the toughest because there are limits to number of cats you can own, and then feeding a cat instantly makes it an owned cat. So as far as people that are just trying to care for a colony, trying to do TNR, which is the only effective way to control population, they're worried about doing it because one angry neighbor or animal control could lean on some old legislation that was put in effect to control wildlife and is now unfairly being used for domestic house cats that have grown up in the wild.
Yeah.
Just as an example, the Denver City Ordinance defines owner as any person who owns, possesses, keeps, exercises control over, maintains, harbors, transports, or sells an animal. I mean, that definition doesn't include feeding, but it's certainly broad enough that it could include feeding.
Well, I heard a city official say just that. If you feed the cat, you own the cat. I heard somebody in authority from the city say exactly that. You feed the cat, you own the cat. So one of my neighbors said, well, how about, does that also apply to skunks? If I feed the skunk, I own that skunk?
Yeah, and that's where the distinction between feral cats and wildlife and the distinction between feral cats and pets, you know, works to the disadvantage of feral cats in every way possible.
Right. I have a real good friend. She evaluates my radio programs for me every week, and she's really, really good, and she's not exactly a cat person. And she was saying the only problem, she said, hey, trap, fine, neuter, fine. This return part, and why just get rid of them, take them to a shelter, and somebody will adopt them. Well, I remember, you know, a lot of animals taken to shelters have to end up being put to sleep because there's simply not enough homes for them. In fact, I have an article here from the Animal Law Coalition, and it says here, I'm going to quote it, just one sentence, 73% of all cats entering shelters are killed. Euthanasia at a public shelter is the number one cause of cat deaths. So it's not that easy just trapping him because there's a biological vacuum which is created when you take that cat away, and that vacuum will be filled eventually by another cat. Some another kitten will survive because a little tiny bit more food left over or available, and then they'll just take that spot. So, you know, just removing the cats is not the answer. TNR actually works. And I think that's why people are... For doing it. It's actually something, it keeps the disease down, it gets rid of cats with feline leukemia and feline AIDS. Cats become much less aggressive, especially male cats, much less fighting. It's a much healthier population, and as probably you two know for sure, there are certain cat diseases which are zoonotic, which means that they can be transferred to humans, and so you got to be a little bit careful. So you want that cat population to be just as healthy as possible, but just from a compassion standpoint, I think that's why we all do what we do with cats, and that cat lady in Greeley also, from a sense of compassion to help these little creatures. But anyway, you agree with the biological vacuum thing, don't you? I mean, that is a fact.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, and I think it's important, you know, for municipalities and counties around the Denver area too to appreciate that fact that if they go out and euthanize cats are just going to move in from surrounding communities and take over those areas. Nature abhors a vacuum. But if they engage in a TNR program and place those cats back out in the areas where they came from, they'll defend their space, and there won't be a problem. And it's been shown in numerous studies that TNR just works better than euthanasia.
Right.
And there's a cost factor, too. You know, most municipalities spend between $130 and $170 per cat. I mean, by the time that they catch the cats and take them to the shelter for the five-day waiting period and then euthanize them, that's an expensive proposition for a city. Whereas TNR, we've got a lot of private people who are subsidizing these programs, and we can just deal with the issue on a much more cost-effective basis for the city.
Sure.
Even though people like Doug Kelly, who's the director of Denver's Municipal Animal Shelter, openly say, hey, TNR is the answer, trying to get public funds for it is not easy.
Well, politically, I see that it perhaps might be a problem, not just from non-cat people and educating them about the facts, but also I just recently heard about a Wall Street Journal article in the August issue and a Weekly Standard article in its September issue discussing how feral cats killed birds and therefore should not be supported in any way. I don't know. Yeah, they do kill birds, but I think much, much less often when they're well-fed, as a matter of fact, because usually if they're out there killing birds, and there's no food other food available for them. They're doing it for food. I would imagine that's the case. I had a stray cat that I adopted 15 years ago. She's now deceased, but I remember we first brought her. I first trapped her, brought her into the house, and all of a sudden there was a pigeon in the house. Absolutely perfect warbling sound of a pigeon. And I'm thinking, how in the world possibly did a pigeon get in my house? It was Bonnie the cat. And that's how she ate. And that's how she survived on the streets. She pretended to be a pigeon. She made perfect pigeon sound. So it's true, yeah. Yeah, they do kill. But if you have food available to them, there's a whole lot less motivation for that cat be killing birds. But I see politically, perhaps from the environmental group or animal rights group, they might object to TNR. So I don't know if either of you heard any of that at all. Have you come across any of that?
I've definitely heard of that issue. And you make a good point in that a well-cared-for colony will definitely hunt less. It'll never be something completely eliminated. Cats will, you know, a fat house cat will still bring you a mouse.
Right.
But the issue is that cats are a domesticated creature. They shouldn't have been outside in the first place. And whether they kill one bird or a million birds, getting their population under control, stopping people from letting out their domestic cats, that's the answer to the problem.
Yeah.
We just let them breed and starve or go for the mass euthanasia route. It's not going to solve the problem, and there'll just be more songbirds dying, more pigeons. And it won't solve the problem at all.
Yeah. And we've I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say a lot of the arguments against TNR often come from bird groups. The people are worried about cats killing birds, but actually those are the people that should be arguing in favor of TNR because TNR is the most effective way of dealing with the issue. And we'd all like to see fewer feral cats out there. Killing birds.
Right.
I think as a practical matter, you know, a number of studies have showed that mice and other rodents are killed in much greater frequency by feral cats. They're just easier for feral cats to kill than birds. So
yeah.
Birds is less of an issue. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, like to have feral cats around because they deal with the rodent problem.
Sure. I think we've all heard in the last month or so of the woman in Greeley, Colorado, who had some 130 dead cats and another 130 sick cats in her home. And it seems to me that TNR legislation would help advertise and educate people about TNR so that compassionate cat people would know how vital the end part of TNR was, neutering. For the health of their cat colonies. I think a lot of people just do it out of ignorance. They're just compassionate, and they start feeding them, and pretty soon they run out of money, and now they start having starving cats and dead cats. And, you know, whereas you get them neutered, and you stop the little kitten-making mill, it shuts it down. You have X number of cats. I've helped out people in the past where they had their share of cats, but they couldn't take any more. So we went out. I got a cat trapper specialist who, Alex, you know of the woman who's trapped thousands of cats. There's only one like her in the entire United States. So, but you know, don't mention her name though. But anyway, and we trapped all those cats and neutered all those cats, and now they can still take care of. I think they had like 15 cats, but that was it. They were like 85 years old on a small pension, and so this will advertise not only the law itself, TNR, but it would be part of it would be well advertised then. And people out there who wanting to help cats, they would know a little bit better what to do, you know. And if they couldn't trap them themselves, they would get somebody. Like, I'm getting up there in years, and I usually need a little help now when I want to trap a cat. And that's what I do. I get a little help. But I know I need to do that and have them neutered. That's part of what needs to be done. Otherwise, you're going to have kittens and more kittens. And so there's a couple advantages, not only the law itself, but the side effects of the law, the advertising, the whole program, because not everybody knows about TNR.
Right, and that's what needs to happen.
I think that's right, and Colorado has a pet overpopulation fund that is specifically directing monies from income tax and license plate sales to sterilizing pet cats. Hopefully some of that money will eventually come the feral way. It hasn't so far.
Yeah.
But, you know, part of that program, too, is educating people. And education is hugely important. We deal with lots of people who just don't understand the problem and who say things like, well, we just want our cat to have one litter for the children and then we'll have it fixed, you know, things like that that are just, you know, born of ignorance. And, you know, we do need to do a better job educating the public.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's other cities out there that have passed TNR legislation, and it's, from what I can see, they've been very successful at doing, like Baltimore, I believe, New York City, I think, also has it. And it's done them and the city real good. I mean, it's helped out the cat population. So I would love to know some of the hurdles. I was trying to get the politician here from our city council to tell us about the hurdles, but she just couldn't make it today. So, but that would be one thing that we need to know before going forward with attempting to start preparing a statute for the city of Denver. I do have Baltimore's TNR regulations right here in front of me. Among other things, it specifically spells out the responsibilities of the feral cat caregiver. And I don't see anything in there too unreasonable. It has a number of things that is expected of the feral cat care. What I'm getting at is that I can easily gather TNR legislation and regulations from around the country and draft something for people to review and comment on for revision. But what do you think of that plan? Each of you both address that, if you would.
Sure. Well, I think that's a great idea. And, you know, I think the things that we've been talking about, good legislation that would, you know, define the responsibilities of feral cat colony care providers, would distinguish clearly between those care providers and cat hoarders. I think that would do a world of good, and it would make people feel a lot safer in caring for feral cats. And I think that's something we could use in Colorado. I know we, Divine Feline, as a group, we haven't done much in this area, and it's simply a matter of where you direct your time. You know, we're trying to neuter as many cats as possible, and it's difficult to find the resources to work on legislation. Alex, I think your group has done a little more in this area, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. And I just wanted to say that, yeah, we definitely need the exemption. And but the place to start, of course, is grassroots. So if you can get people to, when they see a feral cat, their first thought not to be get rid of that cat, but to fix that cat, that's what we need. We need an entire paradigm shift, and that's something that can only happen from the ground up. Needs to be something that's happening cooperatively. We need to get that grassroots going and then also have legislators get behind us. And that's something going to be difficult because Colorado has always had these in place. And Denver is tough for it, but there are other cities. Aurora is notoriously difficult to trap in. You need a trapping license. You have to have leashes on all your outside animals with the same feeding laws applying. So we need to make Denver kind of the house on the hill to show all the other cities in Colorado that TNR legislation is the only thing that's going to fix this problem.
Well, it might have a lot of effect on other cities, not just in Colorado, but in the West. I mean, Denver is considered the Washington, D.C. of the West, and a lot of other Western cities look to Denver for leadership. And anyway, I worked with the federal government for 40 years. I'm now retired for a couple months. But a lot of my time with the government, that's what I did. I wrote federal regulations. And it's very technical writing. And there are guidebooks that tell you exactly how to prepare this or that. And I assume Denver has comparable things. So I'm just, my radio show that we're on here today, it's going to be my contract is going to be expiring in a couple of weeks, and I don't think I'm going to renew. And maybe later on I will in a year or so, but I want to take some time off and try to work on this project. Maybe it'll come to fruition, but if it's going to fail, and we think it's going to fail right from the very beginning, I won't waste my time, and that's really why I needed to talk to some other CAD people. You think it's worth a try?
I think that's great, Mike. I think it's terrific that you're taking this on, and certainly Divine Feline, you know, will give you whatever support we can. I'm sure Rocky Mountain Alley Cat Alliance will as well. You know, it's a difficult situation because city councils, you know, typically don't have great track records when it comes to animals because they're low on the priority list. And, you know, we've seen the problems with the Denver City Council, you know, in things like the pit bull ordinance where people just aren't focusing in an intelligent way on trying to make the problem better. They're doing more knee-jerk reactions. So, you know, it may take an effort. But we can certainly work towards that.
Well, if it looks like there might be success at the end of it, I'm certainly willing to, you know, I'm getting paid through my pension. I'm retired, so I have the time. So let me give it a shot. If we think it might succeed, even with a lot of effort, might succeed. The main thing I see is just making everybody involved, all inclusion. Mm-hmm. So you get that commitment from everybody, listen to everybody, you know, do whatever needs to be done to address whoever has whatever concerns so that you get support, the political support, which I see as being absolutely necessary to get this through the city council. Okay, well, listen, fellas, it's been a pleasure to have you both on my shows, Mark and Alex, and
thank you.
Appreciate your being here today and all your good comments. So you all take
care.
Thank
you, Mike. Thank you very much,
Mike. It's been fun.
Take care. Next week, my guest will be Stephen DeMora of Americans for Job Security, and you should find this program very interesting and very timely. If you happen to have a company or a product you'd like to advertise on Expose, simply send me an email or snail mail, and I'll contact you. You can email me at mikerusso@yahoo.com. Or if you prefer written mail, you can write to me at Post Office Box 13140, Denver, Colorado, 80201, and give me any comments. Until next week at 7:30 a.m. on KNUS 710 Radio, this is Expose with Mike Russo. Have a good week.